You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. It's important to recognize the history and continued presence of colonial occupation on this land. The fact that even I'm speaking in English and not Hunkaminam on the radio right now is a evidence of the history and ongoing reality of colonialism in Canada. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, as I said, and it is Halloween, Iha Sauna. I hope everyone out there is having a beautiful Halloween, and that the spooky vibes are flowing. I'm doing a special episode today to talk about just that. Halloween, Halloween's history, and share some stories. I got some personal context for who I am. If you listen to CITR a lot, you probably recognize my voice from either a PSA or a random fill-in on the airwaves. My name is Kira. I'm the programming manager here at CITR. And every once in a while, I like to hop on the mic and offer some radio to the folks listening. I'm doing a special episode about Halloween, about Samhain this year, because it's my favorite holiday. And also because I want to share some like traditions, some Irish traditions that are connected to Samhain, and that are, I think, interesting context for the history of this holiday, this festival, and what it has become in our contemporary time and in our context of being, at least here in North America. We started off the hour with a track by Apparat called Joel. All of the music that I'm playing today, rather than necessarily being Halloween music, is something that I feel captures the otherworldly and eerie sentiment, I suppose, that I associate with Halloween and that I think a lot of people do. So before I get into sharing stories and history about Samhain with you, I'm going to play you a track by a Dublin-based group called Lancome. Lancome is a fantastic group that has been revitalizing and making interesting changes to like both classic folk songs, Irish folk songs that we would hear we would hear often on St. Patrick's Day, for example, in North America, but things like Rocky Road to Dublin. But they've been making interesting changes to it. They have a very unique sound that is quite eerie, and they bring an interesting kind of reach into the past to the contemporary Irish music scene in a way that is new and innovative. So I'll stop talking, but this is Go Dig My Grave by Lancome, and I hope you're having a beautiful Samhain, and you'll hear my voice again in about 8 minutes. This is a long one.
Go dig my grave, both wide and deep. Place a marble stone at my head and feet, and on my breast a snow white to tell this world that I died for love. Oh Lordy, Lord, oh Lordy me. Oh Lord, oh Lord, oh Lordy me. Same daughter, oh daughter, our troubles ease.
dear, I cannot tell that railroad boy that I loved so well. He courted me my life away, and now with me he will not stay. Oh Lord, oh Lord, oh Lord.
You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the UBC Point Grey campus. You're listening to no particular show in particular. This is a special fill-in episode for Halloween, talking about the history of Halloween, the Festival of Samhain, and how things differ in terms of our current understanding of Halloween and its origins. Or I guess the perspective that I'm coming from is the history, the cultural history and traditions in Ireland, which is where my family is from. So Halloween was traditionally known as Samhain, and it was actually a festival. It was a marker of the transition from the summer and the harvest season into the winter. It's also the name for kind of the season that is between essentially now and Christmas. And this season was associated with the coming of winter, and it would be marked by the end of the harvest. So by the time that we reached October 31st, which would be the eve of Samhain, Icha Sauna, your harvest would have to be finished, and it would be a time of entering into a darker period of time in your experience of your environment, and even in terms of like how you engage with the land and what you're doing culturally and in your communities at the time. Interestingly, with Samhain, it's connected to both a changing of seasons and it's a marker of like physical change and change in activities culturally, but it's also a time of great spirituality in the sense that Samhain, Icha Sauna, is the time when the veil between the living and the dead is the most thin, and it is also a time, because of that thinness between our world and the other world, that you will be more likely to encounter and have an interaction with the other folk, the fae, the fairies. And when I say fairies, it's not our Disney idea of a fairy. It's not a cute little princess with wings. The fairies in Irish mythology are a much more serious being, a much more serious people. And they have an existence in a world that exists parallel to ours. So it would be the other world. And on this day, in this period of time, your chance of being out and about and having an interaction with the fae would be much higher. So there were traditions that were associated both with the celebration of the end of the harvest season. Some of these traditions we still see represented in media today, though not many of them. For example, we think of bobbing for apples as sort of a kitschy old Halloween thing that is maybe not so much done, but it's actually it is part of a long-standing tradition of festivities in celebrations of Samhain in Ireland. Similarly, because of the spiritual significance of this time, there were a lot of celebrations and activities on this harvest festival that were related to divination of, I guess, the future, I suppose, but very much particularly related to the future of relationships and the future of your place in relation to Ireland. So there were activities and rituals related to divining who your child might marry, as well as activities looking at divining whether you're going to be able to stay where your people are, whether you're going to be able to successfully cross the ocean to another place, to emigrate, which is of course a big part of Irish cultural existence, has been mass emigration for many reasons. And then the third option in that particular test would be whether none of this would be successful at all and you might die. So the way that they would go about divining whether you would be able to leave, whether you would stay, or whether you would die would be to place different waters or mud in different bowls, and the person who is engaging in trying to divine their future would close their eyes and stick their finger out, and if they put their finger in the bowl of mud, you would not be able to you would not be successful in your journey to another place. If you put your finger in the bowl of water, you would be successful. So I'll go more into detail here because I am rambling and I'm going off my notes a little. But my point is that there is a really different cultural history to Halloween, to Samhain, than we associate with it now. And I think it's beautiful to be able to understand the differences and look at them with curiosity. Things like witches, fairies, zombies, vampires, none of that is part of the original tradition of Halloween. But the reasons that we dress up are linked to the original traditions. All right. I'm going to stop there. I'm going to give you more music. Forgive my rambling. Also, I'm going to give you a better story about the different traditions around divination in a moment here when I have my notes actually in front of me. In the meantime, we're going to be listening to Solitude. This is a track by M83, and it's a reinterpretation by Felsman and Tilly. I'll be back in just a moment. And I hope everyone who's listening is having a beautiful, beautiful Halloween.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. As I was mentioning before we listened to that track, which was titled Solitude, there are a lot of traditions related to the celebration of Samhain, the festival that our current understanding of Halloween originates from, that we don't actually, I guess, in North America, have any kind of continuation of. Our traditions have changed a lot. There's echoes of the original festival and the original holiday in our current celebrations. But there's a lot of things that are missing from our understanding as well. And if you've just tuned in right before we listened to that track, I was talking about how with Samhain being a time of great spiritual importance, the different celebrations and activities related to it also reflected that. Something you see a lot in histories of, like written histories of the celebrations related to Samhain, is that a lot of the like fun activities that were done in gatherings were also activities of divination, looking to divine the future, usually the future of someone's marriage or relationship. Or possibility of marriage, and also looking at the future of whether they're going to remain in their community, remain in Ireland, or successfully emigrate or go elsewhere. So to correct myself, because I was speaking a bit off the cuff earlier, one of the games of divination or traditions around divination is to set out multiple three bowls of water and different elements. So in your first bowl, you'll have clean water. In your second dish, you will have dirty water. And in the last dish, you'll have clay. And then the one who is looking to divine their future will close their eyes and reach out their hand. If their hand lands in the bowl with clean water, they will successfully cross the sea. If their hand lies in the dirty water, they will not succeed. And if their hand ends up in the clay or the dirt that is in the third bowl, they will die before the year ends. Similarly, there are traditions, like I said, related to divining the future of someone's relationship or marriage. There are a few different things that were used to do this type of divination. But one of them would be to use chestnuts probably, and put them on the metal grate of a fire. And each nut would represent a different person. So if you're looking at a young couple and the future of their relationship and whether they'll marry or not, you're waiting essentially for the chestnut to crack. And if they pop together at the same time, that is a divination that these people are meant to be together and their relationship will continue, they'll be married. But if they do not crack or pop at the same time, it doesn't bode well, I suppose, for their relationship. And it's not going to be seen as a successful relationship. Now, something else that I mentioned before the break there was that with Samhain, with the deep spiritual importance, a huge part of that is this understanding that on this day, there is a thin veil between our world and the other world. The other world being the world of the other folk, the fairies, as well as the world of the dead and our own world. And we observe that part of this tradition in a different way historically, but I did mention that something has kind of passed through, and that is the disguise aspect of Halloween. So yes, the costumes that we wear now are not necessarily things that would have been historically associated with Halloween, but the act of disguising yourself is a part of the tradition. And it was in a way used to try and create a better sense of safety for those who might have had to go outside, might have had to journey through their community on Ícha Samhain, because on that eve you would have a higher likelihood, like I said, of running into something from the other world. And while the fairies are not a malevolent creature or being in Irish mythology, they're not necessarily the most friendly or easy to manage. They're tricksters. They enjoy putting humans into situations that are hard to get out of. So it would be something you wouldn't necessarily want to encounter on Halloween. And particular sites of that you would want to avoid would be fairy mounds, which I can go into a little bit later, but they're essentially considered portals to the other world in this date, in this period of time. And you also want to stay away from graveyards. Now, I'm going to go forward and play us some more music. And when I come back, I'm going to actually be telling some stories that are not necessarily related to Samhain, but I think are indicative of the feeling of Halloween, the spookiness, the eeriness. And I think they're interesting stories, so I'm going to share them with you. And most of them are from actually the part of Ireland that my family currently lives in. So, I guess more music is on the way. And also, if you're wondering where I'm getting my information, where I'm getting these stories from, where I'm sourcing the different traditions from, there's a wonderful website called duchas.ie, D-U-F-A-D-A-C-H-A-S. .ie, and it is actually from the National Folklore Collection of Ireland. They have an unbelievable amount of resources of transcribed oral histories, some of them being part of a school's collection, which was a project in the 1930s in Ireland in which school children were through a program, a national schools program, sent out into their communities to record oral histories from elders in their communities in order to be able to preserve those histories. I'm rambling again, but it's a fantastic resource. It's where I'm sourcing a lot of my information for today's show. And if you're curious about Irish history, about Samhain, about mythology, check it out. All right, so for our next track, we will be playing another track that continues in this slightly eerie and creepy theme. This is Pyre by Son Lux, and again, feels quite appropriate because there is also an association with bonfires and Halloween. I will be back very soon. Maybe we'll play a couple songs here. We'll see how I feel.
Thank you. listening to CITR 101.9 broadcasting the odd from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Please fall into a deep, comfortable state of sleep, and then have a friend or associate play the audio.
I think you should straighten up a little bit. I think you should, you should look at yourself in the mirror sometimes and say, look, what am I doing? Why am I this way? You need a kick in the ass once in a while.
Fridays from 2 o'clock to 3:30 p.m., it's the Bethy Creston Presents radio show. It's CITR's 24 hours of radio art in a snack-sized format. Difficult music, harsh electronics, dark ambient, drone, spoken word, cut-up, collage, and general Creston weirdness. Bethy Creston Presents, Friday at 2 o'clock on CITR FM 101.9. Streaming at theplayer.citr.ca.
On January 17th, CITR 101.9 FM presents our annual 24 hours of radio art programming, featuring innovative approaches to music and sound. It's 24 hours of spoken word, ambient, drone, field recordings, and sound walks, collage, technical support calls, voicemail fills, sound art, and noise. Listen live on CITR 101.9 or online at CITR.ca.
Are you interested in being advertised on the radio? CITR radio station broadcasts across 6,000 square kilometers, which means our airwaves reach 3 million folks across the land. From Point Grey Peninsula to Fraser Valley and as far north as Gibson's and Coquitlam Mountain. To find out how you can be advertising with CITR, contact advertising@citr.ca. advertising@citr.ca. Rates start at $100. Strut your stuff and do it with CITR today.
Hello, hello. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. You're listening to a special Halloween Samhain fill-in show with me, Kira, the programming manager here at CITR. And I'm lucky enough to be joined by one of my co-workers in the studio, Jasper. Hello.
Hi, Kira. How's it going?
Good. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
We were chatting just before we popped back onto the mic here about what we wanted to talk about. And I mean, like, the obvious is Halloween. Like, do you have memories, like a particularly like memorable Halloween or anything from your experiences of Halloween over time that sticks out to you?
Yeah, my memories of Halloween are not so specific, but very much very sensory. Like, I remember my mom would always make us like homemade costumes, and I remember being one of the Ninja Turtles for many years, and I had this like cardboard shell and this like ripped six pack on that I would wear. And my our Uncle David would always take us trick-or-treating. It was like the thing he did every year. He took me and my siblings trick-or-treating, and so all my memories are really happy sensory memories of just like excitement and running around my old neighborhood with my Uncle Dave and my siblings in my Ninja Turtles costume.
Nice. Was your like the neighborhood you grew up in, was that a big trick-or-treating neighborhood?
It's funny you ask, because I remember it being very busy, active, and like I had fireworks going off everywhere. And now, as an adult, I trick-or-treat back in that same neighborhood with my son, or I've done it 1 year at least, and it seems like really quiet compared to my memory. So I'm not sure if like the demographics of the neighborhood have changed, or if Halloween's just less of a big deal. I don't know what's going on, but it does seem like quieter now.
Yeah, I feel like I also wonder the same thing around my neighborhood that I grew up in, because I was still living there up until last year. And like Halloween was huge in my neighborhood when I was a kid, or that's how I remember it. And over the last few years, I feel like it's gotten quieter and quieter and less kids are out trick-or-treating. And I don't know if it's just my memory is so nostalgia-laden that I'm not remembering correctly, or if something actually has changed.
I can't tell either.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on in my neighborhood. I was talking to Duncan from Dunkin' Donuts yesterday, mm-hmm. and Duncan said that his neighborhood is like the opposite. It's just, he's lived in the same neighborhood for like, I don't know, 10, 15 years. And now it's like he runs out of candy every year, handing out candy. Yeah, so it's busier in his neighborhood.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a neighborhood demographic thing then.
Probably. Yeah, it's probably that.
Wild.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was a big trick-or-treater when I was a kid, and I definitely pushed my ability to trick-or-treat as far as it could possibly go. I think the last year I went, I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
And I got to the point where I had a couple people be like, you look a little too old to be doing this. And I was like, okay, I guess this is the last year. People are starting to clock me. I got to get out of here.
What's your favorite candy?
Ooh.
Like what are your chocolate? Are you gummy? Like,
I'm more of a, like, I like a sour candy.
Sour.
I love sour candy.
Tart.
And this is actually a little bit of a contradiction to that, but my favorite Halloween candy was Rockets.
Yes,
because
okay.
I would never get them any other time of the year.
The chalky pucks.
The chalky pucks. Like, they're not good pucks. Candy. They're kind of gross.
I like them too, though.
I do love them.
But I like them, and whenever I eat them, I'm like, these are gross, but I love them.
Yeah,
like, because it's just chalk.
Yeah, I think it's pure nostalgia. That's why I like it.
Okay.
That's it.
So that's your favorite, huh?
Yeah.
Cool.
What about you?
Oh, I mean, I love chocolate. So my favorite candy bar is Kit Kat, probably. I'm a big connoisseur of all things sweet, so I'll eat anything.
Like, nice.
Yeah, except I don't love I don't love Tootsie Roll Pops.
Me neither.
I find them. They're enduring longevity of the Tootsie Roll product line is baffling to me. Like, I don't know who's,
how have they continued to exist
for
this long?
How have they continued to exist? You know, who's eating these? Who's buying these year round? I don't know. You know, Kit Kat bars, Coffee Crisp bars. Oh, I'm going to eat so much candy this week. It's going to be...
Hell yeah. I also am going to eat so much candy this week, inevitably.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to it, frankly.
Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Okay. I'm going to shoot us back over to some music. Thank you for joining me, Jasper.
My pleasure.
And if we have time, when I get back, I'll share a spooky story from Ireland, from where my family's from.
Ooh.
Keep it tuned if you want to hear that, I guess. We're going to listen to Delicia by Fife, and we'll be back very soon.
Hold my breath, but I don't know it. Clench my jaw, but I don't show it. Delicia of mine.
Welcome back. We are currently listening to Delicia by Fife. And in the interest of maximizing my airtime here so I can share all of the goodies I want to share with you this Halloween, I'm going to be speaking over the end of this track. So hopefully you weren't too excited to hear this because I'm ruining it right now. But most important things are the stories that I want to share with you. So for anyone who might know me or who might have had the chance to hear me talk about my family and where I'm from, which I do talk about a lot, I'll be honest, you'll know that the part of Ireland that I grew up in is in County Dublin, on the border between County Dublin and County Wicklow. So there is the Wicklow Mountains, really, but there is a small, by Canadian standards, range of mountains or big hills between Dublin and Wicklow. And on top of one of those hills, on top of Montpellier Hill, is the Hellfire Club. And when I grew up, I would stay with my grandfather in Ireland for a month of every year. And we could see the Hellfire Club from the back window of his house. And it has, even from afar, an eerie presence. It was this dark mass on the hill. It was the only structure visible at that point of the hill, and it was in a large clearing. And I was always told by my grandfather, by my mother, that it was a place of darkness, a place of evil in its history. So I'm going to share some of that history with you now. So the Hellfire Club's history is not very old, but it was built essentially as a hunting lodge. The details of it vary depending on the story that you're reading, what you're looking at. Sorry, I'm getting lost here as I'm going through my notes. The structure itself is generally thought to have been built in around 1725. It is two floors, the upper floor being two large rooms and a hall. So the hall would be in the middle and two large rooms on either side of the hall. And then underneath is the kitchen and servants' quarters. Now, the roof no longer exists on this building, but it was at one point considered to be, it was probably a slate roof, and the story is that it was blown off by a wind, and people said that it was the devil that blew the roof off, because the stones that were used to create the roof of this structure were stolen from a burial mound, a cairn, that is on the same land. And now I think it's understandable through the history of this building and the history of the land that it stands on, that the desecration of the traditional burial site is a big part of the lore and the history that exists around it. Now, there's also kind of a bit of cultural and social fear that exists in the lore of the Hellfire Club, because as a hunting lodge, it was a place in which there was gambling, there was potentially other socially unacceptable behaviors to a very Catholic Ireland at the time. Nevertheless, there are supernatural stories of the things that went on in this place. One of them that is particularly well known is a story of a card game that took place at the Hellfire Club. The story goes as such. Years ago, some men were playing cards in the Hellfire Club. One of the men let a card drop, and as he picked it up, he noticed that one of the men had cow's feet. He was so frightened that he didn't want to tell the men, but after playing for some time, he lost his nerve and shouted what he had seen. At that time, the man with the cow's feet jumped from his chair and vanished, and the man that had seen the feet dropped dead. Now, there's other details of this story, again, depending on the origin that you're getting it from. Because it's a mythology, it's not something that exists uniformly, I guess, across time. There is also, though, a story of a murder that took place at the Hellfire Club. So, it is said that the first roof was slate, as I mentioned, and was blown off in a big wind. But in reality, we don't really know. But when you do visit the Hellfire Club, it is very clear, even from a distance, as I mentioned, that it's a very bleak place. And it was a place where the gentry would gather to party and often engage in excessive behaviors. One night at one of these parties, as these rich members of Dublin society were eating and drinking in excess and likely gambling, a fight arose. And as a result of this fight, one of the servants, the butler, was thrown into the fire and burned alive. Now, this is positioned as a true story, and it's hard to know if it really is. But what I will say is that when I visited the Hellfire Club as a child, I had the folklore in mind. I walked around the building 7 times backwards, and unfortunately I didn't see the devil, which is what's supposed to happen. But what I did notice is that when I was walking through the building, and particularly when I arrived in the basement of the building, which would have been the servants' quarters, it was this overwhelming feeling of weight and heaviness and darkness and a deep sadness. And I wasn't the only person that experienced it. I spoke with my mother afterwards and with my cousin who I had experienced this with. And it was a shared experience. There was something wrong with that part of the building in which this butler would have lived. I am unfortunately running out of time and I do have more stories to tell, but I'll leave you with that. Happy Halloween, and we'll play ourselves out here with another track by Lancome. This one's a little bit more upbeat, so hopefully it'll lead you into the next show well. Keep it tuned to listen to Mixotroph, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Thank you.